Hello, hello, welcome in. This is the Red Bird Reboot Podcast. I'm Blake Murphy on Twitter at BlakeMurphy7. We are going to talk some Cardinals football. Coming off of a loss today to the San Francisco 49ers, recording here on a Wednesday. Should have this up hopefully by Thursday. I'm going to have the first half of the show as a recap. And then in the second half of the show, should have Vance Meek over from Cincinnati to be able to preview the Bengals game upcoming, as well as having a Saturday show. Should be a lot of fun. But let's talk about this game first. Cardinals, I think, put forth the best effort, but this is one of those games in which you look at and say that this is a spot that shows that it's not to say that last week was a fluke against Dallas, but more to show that the Cardinals are, at the end of the day, still a team in rebuild. You don't build Rome in a day. They end up being able to put together a decent half of football, going to 21-10, I believe it is, entering into the half, being able to actually have some pretty effective passing and throwing. You have Josh Dobbs ends up kind of completing about a third of his passes for 265 yards. You have James Conner and him rushing for almost 100 yards against the Niners, which we have a very good up front defense. But on the other side, you just have Christian McCaffrey going off and getting about 167 yards total, over 100 of those on the ground. And Brandon Ayuk catching about 24 yards a catcher. So he gets six catches for 148 yards. You also have Christian McCaffrey get three touchdowns on the ground and one, of course, through the air. It just felt like that the Niners were in total control of that game, even when Arizona was able to rally back and get, I believe it was coming out of the half, a touchdown after causing the Niners to punt. Maybe a little bit of worrisome for Niners fans. Niners immediately go back on a 75-yard drive, get the touchdown. Let's talk about what was impressive, what was an issue for the game. The biggest thing, I think, for Cardinals fans is that this is a team that, while this is their first blowout loss of the season, they still were putting up a fight through at least the first three and a half quarters. They at least were able to, for the most part, keep the game within one to two scores up until they at least got into the very end. They had an overthrow, I believe, of Zach Ertz. They were finally able to give up. The Niners were able to get home. They sacked Josh Dobbs, at least in the third quarter. You have a rough 20-yard punt by Nolan Cooney, who ends up being released by the Cardinals earlier. That's something that, whether it was an issue with him snapping or holding, whether it was a better punter available, we'll probably find out a little bit more as far as it is with the coaches this week. They end up seeing the Niners be able to keep the game going by scoring again. At least that was kind of the Cardinals' last gasp that they had, was there. And I believe the fourth quarter, they go down and get another touchdown on a drive that just kills the clock. Arizona, to their credit, end the game with two incomplete passes, one that should have been caught by Zach Ertz. He drops it third and six. Then on fourth and six, another dropped touchdown from Zach Pascal. I know earlier, with those who listened to the show, I predicted a backdoor cover for the Cardinals as a possibility. Still didn't think that they would get it, but at the end of the day, that was something that probably should have happened for the Cardinals. They should have been able to cover the two-touchdown spread. They had the opportunity to, and of course, they fall short. It's a spot where, when we're looking at this team in the future, you can recognize that they're fighting hard, but it's like watching not necessarily a Rocky versus Apollo Creed, but like watching a underweight guy taking on a heavyweight class. Like, this is the Niners right now. They're 4-0. They look like perhaps the most complete team in the National Football League, maybe the best team in the National Football League. There was only one incomplete pass on the day for Brock Purdy. The Cardinals were not able to get home at all. Whenever it felt like they were blitzing, they just were able to pretty much check down or be able to hit Christian McCaffrey. They used option routes, which I know if you remember what an option route is, think back to one of the first games he played against the Niners, Isaiah Simmons, covering the running back out of the backfield. Running back can choose to go to the right or the left. He picks the one option. You don't see the linebackers be able to cover. This is a game, at least, where the Cardinals on defense were sorely outmanned. And I think that they did miss Jonathan Ledbetter. You can look at and say that up the middle, Arizona was not as strong as they have been in the past. This is more of, I think, a return to what we expected that they would be defensively for Arizona. And that's because they've played a offense that seemed to get their legs under them after they played Arizona week one. Of course, the three turnovers helps. A team that looks like one of, if not the worst, in the NFL, in the New York Giants, who, let's be clear, were able to make a stunning second half comeback while they had Saquon Barkley. When Saquon goes out, we've seen the last couple of games without multiple starting offensive linemen. Giants have really struggled. Same thing goes with the Dallas Cowboys, missing three of their starting offensive linemen. And that just, it kind of is what it is. Right now, you are looking at an offense that, while Josh Dobbs has played well, it's still limited overall. You're looking at one of the best teams in the NFL on both sides of the ball, being able to have multiple all-pros, not just as part of their offense, but as part of their defense as well. And despite the fact that Arizona was able to see 96 yards from Hollywood Brown, they had two touchdowns to Michael Wilson. Both players look like they're on track for 1,000 yards receiving, which is a fantastic start to the year. It's not an offense that is able to keep up blow for blow with the Niners. They have to run the ball, chew up clock, get some of those long drives, and then get the explosive plays down the field, such as to Hollywood and even to Michael Wilson. But they have to pick and choose those. And for that matter, it does show that the Cardinals are, I think, in a place where you can see the potential for where their team is and where they're growing. You can ultimately recognize that sometimes it's about timing in the NFL. In 2021, the Niners had Jimmy Garoppolo and they had Trey Lance. Garoppolo was hurt, Trey Lance comes in, and the Cardinals are able to get the win. Later that year, Arizona just pretty much blows it against the backup to the backup quarterback there. And you can kind of see at least some of the fact that the Cardinals have been stretched thin at that point. You can see now that they've been putting together a little bit more of something foundational, but it's nowhere near close to what the Niners foundation already has been. Brock Purdy at least looks like it didn't ever look hard for him. Not only did it seem like he was protected, but it seemed like he was playing pitch and catch. The only one time that there was actually a incomplete pass was the play that Arizona made, but it really was something where it felt like that they were showing up in a preseason game against a team that was starting third and fourth stringers. And frankly, compared to most NFL teams, it's kind of where Arizona is in some regards, at least on the defensive side of the ball. Now, of course, they also had a fumble by Josh Dobbs, who did recover it. And neither team was actually able to see a turnover, which is something that I had picked pregame. So credit to the Niners for being that good that the Cardinals now have essentially had to make moves, recognizing that they are probably more of a third or fourth team in one of the toughest divisions in football. That's okay to be where you're at. It's better to admit that you are there than try to stretch too far, only to kind of snap and fall flat on your face, as we saw the Cardinals do last year. As far as for some of the best plays we saw, the biggest story, I think, has to be talking about Michael Wilson. Because this is a guy who's been able to show that he can get separation, and what he showed in this game was that he can get targeted on some relatively deep throws. We were able to see overall with him, his long that he had was, I believe, a 33-yard gain. He also had that one touchdown in the end zone. The fact that you've been able to see a functional passing attack from Arizona is really impressive. There's been some great play designs. We'll talk a bit more, I think, on some of our recap heading into the week after the Bengals preview. But there is a certain play in which the Cardinals have a essentially jet sweep type of a motion in the backfield. They move the tight end, Trey McBride, from the right side of the field to the left. He goes back over to the right-hand side and does it in a way where he almost loops around the quarterback. So think of it almost like you're having to basically go like as an edge rusher, loop around the offensive tackle to try to get to the QB. The way that it was designed, he runs into his quarterback if it's too early. He ends up not being there in time to block if it's too late. The execution was beautiful. And as a result, you have Nick Bosa, who thinks he's getting a free shot at either the running back or the quarterback. Instead, you get a tight end running on him with a full head of steam hitting him into the side. Beautiful. You also end up seeing a play earlier where, in order to chip block Nick Bosa, the Cardinals put Rondale Moore into the slot. He runs over, blindside blocks Bosa, blows him up. Very funny play to see when you think of a little guy. He plays tough, and While we didn't get to see, unfortunately, as much of the Rondale Moore when it came to running the football, it was mostly the James Conner and the Joshua Dobbs, of course, whether through scrambles, whether through some design runs, had about 48 yards. You really felt like that some of that toughness from Rondale would have been fun to be able to see out of the backfield. He ends up actually with 0 yards, zero catches on the day. Meanwhile, the Christian McCaffrey show shows off. When you give a Kyle Shanahan team an elite running back, someone who's able to break tackles, make yards, be able to actually make a huge push in the receiving game, I think the defense got a little bit exposed. You can look at some of the PFF grades, but there were guys who had bad, bad games for the Arizona Cardinals, unfortunately, as far as that went. And you had some very elite receiving games by the Niners, especially McCaffrey, even the likes of Deebo Samuel, who only had 3 carries for 6 yards, but he was able to, I think at least, just kind of touch the ball once or twice. It was mostly Brandon Ayuk who was blowing guys wide open, no one being covered. On average, if the Niners had a catch, they were getting on average 14 yards a carry. The Cardinals were not able to bring a safety into the box to be able to stop Christian McCaffrey. And if they did, then it was immediate that the Niners were able to pick up a huge play through the air. A lot of guys' protection was an issue. And being able to rush the passer is something I think that we'll see for Arizona over time. If they play better quarterbacks, better offensive lines, I could see that being a struggle. And that's where it's going to be pressure on the offense to move forward. Gosh, they're in a tough division. The Rams end up going to overtime against a Colts team, which is 2-2. Has played super well with or without their starting quarterback, Anthony Richardson, a Seattle team which annihilated the Giants on Monday Night Football to the tune of 11 sacks. And of course, San Francisco 4-0. The Cardinals right now, they have played only one of these NFC West games. They still have to take on the rest of this division, which currently has a 9-3 record. That is something where if the Cardinals were in a different division, things may be different, but it's part of why people have picked them to finish low this year. And while it seems very clear the Cardinals are probably not going to be the worst team in the National Football League, it's still better to note that unlike last week, it's not necessarily that they're a bad, good team or a team figuring it out or a team maybe that will be able to get it done when Kyler comes back, but rather one that has been playing to their level of competition, both good or bad, except when they end up playing what is, I would say, a healthy team that's at least been given forewarning, been able to game plan against them, and doesn't have some of the struggles that the Dallas Cowboys have had, or the struggles that, for that matter, the New York Giants have had this year. And I think moving forward, you take a look at this being essentially for their season, it may not be what we would consider a season-ending loss if they lose to the Bengals this week. But at that point, you'll be 1-4. You'll have 2 more division games coming up. You probably have to win both of those to get back to a 3-4 type of staying in the mix for it. For those who are looking at it and saying, this could be a team that maybe if Kyler Murray comes back, they've played just well enough, that could push their offense to the next level. The defense, we've seen it maybe good enough. I think that a lot of fans are looking at this going, if you can beat the Bengals, it will be a solid notch in Jonathan Gannon's belt. But also will be recognizing that you're taking on not the best of the best, but you're beating on teams that are hampered, teams that are struggling, teams that are in, honestly, a worse position than the Arizona Cardinals that have no run game and a beat-up quarterback. We'll talk more about how that will shake out, but I do think that for Cardinals fans, this was maybe an expected loss. Maybe what wasn't as expected by some was the Cardinals entering the third quarter, proving themselves to be still capable of keeping it close, but we've so far seen through 3 different games. We've seen the Cardinals get a big first half lead, and then second half, their defense ends up blowing the lead. The offense in the first game turned it over. The second game, same story. Defense ultimately was not able to cover the receivers. Week 3 is the big difference. Week 3 is the exception to this rule right now, where the Cardinals were able to be aggressive enough on offense, make use of a busted play, and got that last turnover to end the Cowboys game, despite the fact that Dallas was outgaining them throughout the game on offense. And it makes me wonder if this team is going to end up being in line for more of a top 5 pick after all, just because of what we have seen, even if they add Buda Baker back to this franchise. if the best that they could be ends up being about 6-10, that would be probably a tremendous tribute to the coaching staff that we're seeing in place. It's also showing that you're probably in need of talent to be able to actually contend against some of these other teams. But what a expectation you can have now to recognize that instead of this being a 35-0 or some type of terrible blowout, to be able to be close enough to be within 5 points within that 16-21, missing the 2-point conversion, mind you, that was something that I felt like they seemed like they had an opportunity, weren't able to punch it in to make it a 3-point game. The Cardinals, when they get talent, I think will be in some of these closer games because of the staff they have assembled. And even because of, just from what we have seen, the ability to get a little bit extra out of some of their guys, I think it should have very many Cardinals fans excited for that future. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back here with Vance Meek. Probably, in for my time, it'll be a day or so. For you guys, it'll be a couple of seconds here to talk about those Cardinals. Take care.
Hello, welcome in. This is the Redbird Reboot. I'm Blake Murphy, and we're here joined with Vance Meek. And Vance, I have to remember, who are you writing for these days, at least covering the Cincinnati Bengals?
I am doing some podcast work and hopefully soon some writing for the Around the Block Network.
Fantastic. Awesome. So we're here to preview the Arizona Cardinals. They are at home taking on the visiting Cincinnati Bengals. This is a game that I think a lot of people before the season were looking at saying, hey, if Kyler Murray's not going to be back yet, if Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals perpetual playoff team are coming into town, this seems like it could be a one-sided smearing. We've seen now in this, the season has progressed. It's been a very different season for both teams. The Arizona Cardinals are still 1-3, right near the bottom of the NFL, but they've shown quite a bit of fight over their first four games, including the Cowboys upset. Meanwhile, the Cincinnati Bengals have really struggled. Burrow has clearly been playing hurt. Obviously, having the ankle injury earlier in the preseason has been an issue. Vance, as we get started with discussing and previewing the matchup, are there other issues that the Bengals are going through? Obviously, health of T. Higgins is something we'll talk about. But what is there to this Bengals team struggling with this 1-3 start and really not looking like a competent offense at all? Is it just Joe's health, or is there more to it?
It's a big part is obviously Joe's calf, his calf, not his ankle. If you go back, look at Zach Taylor's tenure, the Bengals start slow. He doesn't let his players play preseason. Maybe that's part of it. Burrow seems to have something going on every offseason, so he doesn't really get a lot of work last year, notably with the appendix issue. So the Bengals tend to start slow. Last year, they were 0-2, very famously. Everybody started writing them off, and they went on a big win streak, ended up in the playoffs and the AFC Championship game. So there is something to that. However, Joe Burrow's calf being injured has really changed the offense drastically, because what makes Joe Burrow so good is not only his accuracy and his ability to read defenses and the things that you would expect a quarterback to do in 2023, he also is adept at extending plays just enough to find one of those talented receivers. You mentioned Higgins, Jamar Chase, obviously, Tyler Boyd, one of the more underrated players around the league. Joe Mixon, obviously, a very good running back as well. So his ability to extend plays, make throws off platform, step up in the pocket, scramble if necessary, all of that is gone. If you watch the Bengals play right now, he's taking the shotgun snap, maybe one step backwards, and that's it. Where he lands at, that's where he's staying. And so if you're able to get to the quarterback with pass rushers, and we saw Tennessee do that on this past Sunday, they just brought blitz after blitz, safeties, corners, linebackers, anybody was coming, and you never knew who it was, and he can't get away from them. He's just taking the hits, and so that limits the offense completely. That changes everything that they want to do. And thus far, the coaching staff, Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan in particular, have not figured out a way to work around Burrow's limitations, and you end up with 3 touchdowns in 4 games that way.
Yeah, it's interesting because in a lot of ways, there's a lot of similarities between 2023 Joe Burrow and 2022 Kyler Murray. Kyler came into the season, obviously, after that contract dispute, but a lot of people don't know that he ended up with a wrist injury to his throwing hand, which ended up being something that we saw through the season. And I think it affected him more than probably the Cardinals or other people had said, because you look at him last year, he was one of the lowest in yards per attempt as far as quarterbacks went. The deep ball that he'd been known with over the first few seasons was just gone. There were times that he just had overthrows, for especially in the middle of the field. And obviously they had a lot of issues with the offensive line, so you end up seeing him just kind of throw the ball only to short yardage. Similar this year with Joe Burrow. Right now, if you're looking at the yards per attempt, which is kind of how aggressive a quarterback can be, which also defines their protection, how deep they're throwing, he's behind Zach Wilson of the Jets, Gardner Minshew, Bryce Young. He is last in the league at 34 overall with a 4.8 yards per attempt. It just feels like that you're looking about a situation where, like you said, he's not able to kind of cover for some of those different holes that you're seeing in the pocket. And it just is not something where he's been able to get rid of the ball, or I should say hold on to the ball. He's been getting rid of it at a high clip, trying not to take hits. This is something it feels like ultimately where it's probably going to linger throughout this season. And so I think the question I have is this a place where the Bengals, do we expect to see improvement in this area from what they do with Joe Burrow? Or are we going to be talking about just something at least that the Bengals are going to have to reset, recorrect, and then go into with 2024? Because it's always difficult to face a lost season, and that's how Cardinals fans felt when we came into this year, knowing that Kyler Murray was probably not going to be coming back until late October, November at the earliest, and just what the impact that can have on your team, and especially on your fan base, particularly one that has had a lot higher expectations than Arizona fans have had in Cincinnati.
Yeah, the expectations were of that the Super Bowl window is wide open as of right now. Actually opened up a few years ago, earlier maybe than expected. I expect this was, a lot of people predicted this year to be the year that the Bengals really had a big chance to break through. They still had T. Higgins that you talked about earlier. They still had Trey Hendrickson and DJ Reader, and a lot of those guys, the losses were minimal, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of what they did lose. But most of the offense and defense is intact, and so it was thought they were Super Bowl favorites. So, yeah, it's hard on fans to watch a team that you thought was going to be a Super Bowl team come out and sputter. The injury, yeah, it's if you've had any kind of, a calf injury and then tried to play a sport on that calf, on that leg, it's hard to do. You can tell he can't plant his leg. And you mentioned Kyler Murray struggling with throws down the field, balls fluttering, balls not being accurate, and that's exactly what we're seeing. He can't plant and throw off of his foot, so he's kind of falling away and throwing the ball instead of stepping into it. So when he does try to go down the field, they're sailing out of bounds, or they're being overthrown, or they're being underthrown, and there's just no downfield game at all. And against the Titans, we saw them actually try to get some longer throws. He held the ball a little more. All he did was get hit more. So it didn't pan out. And so, yeah, if Bengals lose this week, and really this is kind of a season on the brink situation for them, if they fall to 1-4, then you've got Seattle after that, and then a bye week. They still have the 49ers. They still have the Bills. They still have the Browns again, the Ravens again. They've got the Chiefs later in the season. To expect them to fall to 1-4, maybe even 2-4 if you give them a win against Seattle, and then go on a situation where they win 10 of their last 11 or whatever it works out to. That's really hard to do in any season for any football team, much less the gauntlet that the Bengals have in the second half.
Yeah, the Cardinals play the AFC North this year, and the Niners, the Seahawks, and the Rams with Matthew Stafford actually playing pretty well. The Bengals were able to get a victory over him Monday night with a very aggressive attack. That was one of the things I kept watching, was it felt like it was a three and out punt. Eventually, the Bengals' veteran defense was able to step up. One of the things, at least, that we can look at that I think is a big key with this game is that Arizona has been actually a lot better as far as when it comes to EPA or just for DVOA, their offensive ranking. They've been able to have a pretty good rushing attack for the most part. On the defensive side, they're down Buda Baker, who is probably their best player on defense. He's out. They see multiple players retire along the front of the defensive line. To the Bengals side, they lose Jesse Bates in the offseason. It's one of the players who I think have been very underrated as far as for Lou Anarumo's defense. Who do you feel like may be missing their safety more? Because there's a lot of good arguments to be made that both teams are missing those safeties about equally, considering the impact that we have seen on those defenses without them there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, players of that caliber, whether you're talking about Buda Baker or you're talking about Jesse Bates, you don't easily replace guys like that. Cincinnati, honestly, has done a fairly good job. Dax Hill has played really well, stepping in for Jesse Bates. He's had some nice plays. Blitzing has great range, and the secondary can cover, you know, the entire field. Really, the bigger loss, I think, for the Bengals, at least to this point, was Von Bell. The Bengals lost both their safety. Bates and Von Bell both gone. Von Bell to Carolina, Bates to Atlanta. Bates having a fantastic year, by the way. I think he has 3 picks already. Yeah. you know, the Dax Hill's played really well, but they've really kind of struggled with the other safety spot. Nick Scott, they brought in as a free agent. They drafted Jordan Battle out of Alabama. And those guys have played both, their fair share of time, but they haven't really fit in quite as well yet. So if it's a direct comparison, just Bates and Baker, then I would probably lean that Arizona might miss Baker a little more just because Dax Hill has been so good. But if you're just talking safeties altogether, the loss of Von Bell has really hampered them so far. He meant a lot. He was a leader on that defense, and he did everything. He fit perfectly in what Lou Anarumo wanted to do on defense.
Yeah, definitely. Now, coming into this game, looking at the injury report, Arizona's going to potentially get back, at least the practice window has been open for Dennis Daly, who a lot of Titans fans coming into the season at least looked at with, let's just say at least it was not very glowing reviews. He was one of their starters at left guard. They also had Hjalte Froholt, who's really been impressive, at least in his time starting at center's limited. It seems like that the tush-push play, for one reason or another, has been kind of damaging to some of the centers, given how we've seen a lot of those guys end up on the injury report. The Cardinals, at least, have been pretty banged up on the defensive line for the most part, whereas for the Bengals, it really comes down to the offense. You've got T. Higgins did not practice with the ribs injury, Orlando Brown Jr. limited, obviously, and then Irv Smith, who a lot of Bengals fans were really hoping that he'd be able to kind of take over in that starting tight end role. He just hasn't seemed to be quite there to the level, I think, of expectations. How healthy do you feel like the Bengals are coming into this game, and are there any matchups you think that if someone doesn't go that one of these sides could exploit?
Well, the biggest one's going to be T. Higgins, obviously. With the fractured rib, he won't be playing unless something drastically changes that I haven't heard yet. He's out for probably at least a couple of weeks. He says that it's more of a pain management situation for him, but I don't think he's playing this week. Burrow is playing on the injured calf. There's some video of him moving around fairly well yesterday, so I guess maybe a little bit of optimism there that he may be feeling at least a little bit better. Irv Smith, you mentioned, hasn't played. For one, but even in preseason and practices and stuff, he's not. The Bengals don't use their tight ends as much as other teams, so maybe they're not feeling that one as much just because they're not a tight end oriented team. They don't use a lot of 12 personnel, so that's kind of. And they've gotten actually some decent production out of Tanner Hudson, who came off the practice squad and kind of filled his role. So I don't know that one will be a big loss. Obviously, losing a left tackle if Orlando Brown Jr. doesn't play would be pretty huge for them. They don't have a ton of depth. You'd probably wind up with Jackson Carman moving in, John Williams back to left tackle, Carman maybe at right tackle. He hasn't really been effective for a second-round pick. So those would be – I would expect those guys to play. I haven't seen any updates on them today. But the loss, obviously, of T. Higgins, you want to talk about a matchup that can be exploited by Arizona, obviously taking away T. Higgins out of that offense. Then you can focus more on what Jamar Chase is doing, and then you can live with Tyler Boyd in single coverage. He's not explosive, or at least not nearly as explosive as somebody like T. Higgins is. So that would be the obvious advantage that Arizona would have.
Yeah, that's going to be the most interesting matchup, I think, is going to be what do the Bengals do with T. Higgins out? Because their cornerback situation has probably been one of the would be considered a lot worse if it hadn't been for how the Cardinals have been overperforming. They've had Marco Wilson's gotten beaten in coverage a lot of this season, especially in single coverage with deep threats. And the other side, you got Keitrell Clark, who's played pretty well so far, but he's also a 6th-round rookie. And the team out of the slot has been kind of making do with Jalen Thompson for the most part as their nickel. If the Bengals are able to get time, it feels like that there's at least enough weapons on that side that we've seen, especially last week against the Niners. Brandon Ayuk was wide open multiple times, and it'll be interesting, I think, to see how that will play off along with Joe Mixon. If you feel like that there's a bigger game that needs to be had, would it be Ja'Marr Chase trying to find these one-on-one matchups? Joe maybe kind of, you know, he's expressed talking about maybe forcing the ball a bit more, trusting the receiver to make a play, because that to me would make the most amount of sense if you end up getting one of those situations, just like, you know, we would take Chase over Wilson and Clark, you say. Or would it be more of a game where Joe Mixon needs to step up as far as where we saw last week where the Cardinals, their rushing defense was missing Jonathan Ledbetter. He's been limited in practice, may be back, but their defensive tackle, their defensive line situation has just been brutal. That's something I think I'm curious. Do you feel like that it'd be more of needing to have this be a Ja'Marr Chase game, or does this need to be a Joe Mixon game, or heck, does it need to be both in order for the Bengals to be able to succeed with Joe Burrow ailing as it is?
Probably both, to be honest, but Joe Mixon, it comes back to Joe Burrow's health and how he's feeling. If he is able to be closer to himself, then you want to see him throw the football. And he does need to trust himself more as he gets healthier. He has been hesitant to throw in any kind of tight windows at all, maybe because he can't plant and throw, as I mentioned earlier. He can't put quite as much velocity on those passes to get him into those tight spots. So we've seen a lot more checkdowns than what we're used to and things like that. A lot of Andy Dalton jokes going around Cincinnati right now. Joe Mixon has played fairly well. He's looked much better than he did last year. I had some criticisms about Joe Mixon. He wasn't very explosive. He didn't break tackles. This year, he has been the exact opposite. He's breaking tackles. He's running hard. He has looked shiftier. So he clearly put in some work in the offseason. He's clearly motivated, and he has moved the ball effectively when they've been able to use him. The first drive against Tennessee last week, they've had about an equal mix of run pass, and they moved the ball all the way down to the 2-yard line, settled for a field goal. But they were able to move the ball. After that, as they started to fall behind and couldn't use Mixon nearly as much, the offense kind of fell apart. The Titans knew what was coming. They started sending blitzers all over the place. They knew Burrow couldn't plant and throw the football, and it just went all downhill from there. So I think being able to get Ja'Marr Chase, who, by the way, is always open, get him the ball and keep the Arizona defense from keying on Mixon all game long is going to be key, and not allowing Arizona to get out in front, because that's been the other problem, is they're falling behind and then their entire offense has to change and they have to throw the ball, and Mixon is becomes a smaller part of the offense and the defense knows what's coming.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think you want to make sure that you can get your stars the ball. That's one of the things that in Arizona basically would fall onto the likes of James Conner on the defensive side. They've been able to actually do pretty well with their receivers as well. Right now, their top two receivers in Hollywood Brown and the rookie third rounder Michael Wilson are both on track for 1,000 yards. We'll see if that's able to be sustained over time, but it's at least been improvement over, especially what we saw last year with the offense. A lot of that is just due to Arizona having a great rushing attack. How do you think that Lou Anarumo, the Cardinals interviewed at least for their head coach position? Right. It was one of the guys who I felt like for looking in the past, we found out, all right, they're going to interview Jonathan Gannon. They seemingly had been down to two guys left between it was Lou and also the offensive coordinator for the Giants. Mike Kafka. And I remember at that spot, I'm like, if Gannon's out, then just please be Anarumo, because I had seen interviews and looked at everybody. I'm like, I just didn't see that same type of head coach mentality in Mike Kafka, at least as far as for what the team needed to be able to have a, you know, boost to discipline, being able to have the ability to lead men. Kind of when you see a Cliff Kingsbury not work, you usually go to the opposite. It seemed like Anarumo was going to be like that. How do you feel like that they can attack this Cardinals team? Because the Cardinals right now, as far as it comes to running the ball, they're getting about 143 rushing yards per game. They're sixth right now in the NFL, and they're actually being able to put up points this year. They're right now at about 22 or so points a game. If you take a look at how their offense has actually been pretty consistent for the most part, it's really ultimately been that they've not been able to have an elite offense getting kind of that 30 points a game mark, but their defense, by not giving up 30 points a game, has been able to stay in it all of the time. How do you feel like that Lou Anarumo will be able to attack quarterback in Josh Dobbs, who's shown that he's mobile and has also shown like he can avoid turnovers. Bengals and Cardinals, both positive turnover differentials this year, despite being 1-4.
Yeah. Lou Anarumo is maybe the last coach in Cincinnati that still has the trust of fans. With the struggles on offense, especially one obviously, as you know, feeds the other. If the offense can't stay on the field and the Bengals offense hasn't, then the defense is behind the eight ball immediately. And so when you play teams that the Bengals have played, and they've played the Browns with Nick Chubb, they played the Ravens with obviously a good rushing attack and Lamar Jackson, they played the Titans with Derrick Henry, and these teams are able to get out in front and then just absolutely lean on the Bengals defense with these power rushers, especially in Chubb and Henry, and they're exhausted by the time halftime into the second half. And if the Cardinals can do that, then I don't think it matters what Lou Anarumo does. The biggest part of what the Bengals have struggled, and they are 31st overall against the run in terms of rushing yards allowed per game. Part of that is obviously that they're on the field all the time. Time of possession, I didn't look it up, but the Bengals have got to be way behind in terms of time of possession. Their offense is just not staying on the field. If they what they're going to do is not going to change. They're going to stay with their regular defense. They're not going to change anything. They need better execution from certain guys. When they bring guys like Sam Hubbard off for a breather, the backups aren't really doing much. They have Zach Carter. They use a, I believe, third-round pick on. He has not been very good so far. So when he's in the game, they're noticeably worse on run defense. Trey Hendrickson has struggled at times in run defense. And then they struggled mightily in tackling guys, shiftier backs like Lamar. Well, he's not a running back, obviously, but Lamar Jackson had several runs where he just juked the entire defense out of their shoes. So a lot of it's just discipline by the players and execution by the players. Lou's going to do what Lou does and expect his defense to hold up. They have the talent to do so. DJ Reader's there, one of the best run defensive tackles in the league. Sam Hubbard is also really good against the run. Both linebackers they just paid, and both are quality linebackers, both underrated linebackers. But so far, execution's been a little lacking, and I expect that he was probably pretty hard on them through practice this week, and hopefully they hold up. But it comes down again to the offense managing to let them get a break on the sideline, because if they're on the field all the time, 35, 36, 37 minutes of the game, then it doesn't matter what's happened. They're going to get wore out, and they're going to give up big chunks of yards again.
Right, and that's, I think, the biggest thing, at least looking for this game, is if the Bengals are able to come out and run the football against a Cardinals team that has also struggled with tackling, struggled with defending the run, that's something where it ultimately may come down to being a lot closer game, I think, than many people think, because, unless we see turnovers kind of be something that decides or settles it, and right now both teams have been pretty adept at avoiding turnovers. Say what you will about how the Bengals have been so low offensively. I think they're only rushing for about 70 yards per game. They're passing at about I think it's about 166 yards per game, which is just, it's really just a terrible offensive showing so far. And then, of course, you take T. Higgins off of the field. It is kind of one of those like stoppable forces meeting the movable object when it comes to the Cardinals and their run defense. There's at least been adequate in defending the run, but it is one of those spots at least where I could see this being a spot where if neither team ends up turning the ball over, it's going to be a lot closer, I think, than people are anticipating. Partially, I think it's going to end up coming down to if the Bengals are really looking at this with their backs against the wall, as far as their hopes and aspirations, whereas Arizona has been kind of pushing and trying to kind of get some of those wins. It really is going to be interesting to see if that pressure ends up being with something that makes more of a diamond in Cincinnati's aspect, or if it ends up kind of cracking, because like you said, if you do go through and say, hey, the Bengals do lose this game, not only were the Cardinals at 2-3, you'd probably hear all the people talking about them tanking would probably, go away for at least another week or so. You at least have all these questions about where they're going to go from here. And so I think that's kind of the question at least I'd have with you is, as far as it comes with the Bengals, this may be their last chance for a little while to have at least a team that's simple enough that it's not as difficult to go out and get a win versus a Bills team versus some of the other Niners, Seahawks, even who had 11 sacks on Monday Night Football. This is something where it feels like this is definitely going to be a make or break it game for the Bengals. Whereas the Cardinals, they've been competitive each year, but they've also had a lot of lack of pressure from expectations in a lot of ways. And I feel like that's one of the defining stories that will go in. So what do you feel like the storyline will be coming out of this game for the Bengals and the Cardinals should either team end up suffering a loss?
I think if you kind of hit on something there, the pressure's all on Cincinnati at this point. I think the Cardinals are playing with house money, so to speak. I don't think a lot of people expected them to be competitive in a lot of these games. Before the season started, you mentioned earlier, this was a sort of afterthought game. It was, you know, expected the Bengals would you know, kind of come in and blow Arizona out, and you know, this would not be a important game on that end. And now with everything that's happened, it's the absolute opposite, and Cincinnati is in a must-win situation. So if the Bengals win this game, obviously they gain some optimism. You gained another week with Burrow, ideally not any setbacks, so he gets another week healthier, and you start to think maybe this team can get on a roll again. If they lose this game, however, they're falling 1-4 with the gauntlet of games they've got coming up. You know, the optimism is sort of on its last legs. 1-4 is I don't know the exact numbers of teams that have made the playoffs after starting 1-4, but seeing the numbers of the teams that have been 1-3 and made it, I think it was like 2.5% or something. I've got to imagine that your playoff window is out the window. You're more looking ahead, trying to stay healthy, trying to experiment, put some things together, and look forward to 2024. Fans are going to start turning towards the draft and me in particular. And you know, kind of it's really a must win situation in my opinion in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Speaking of, I think it'd be so much easier if we hadn't seen a couple of these surprises happen in the AFC. Obviously, at least the Bills and the Dolphins have looked like super teams out there. And then the Ravens have looked much, much more effective with Lamar, despite the fact that they basically don't have a single wide receiver to the level that the Bengals have, like three of them, which is crazy. Yeah. But being able to at least see how the entire AFC South being 2-2, the play of some of these rookie quarterbacks being surprising, like you said, it does feel like that the margin for error was already pretty tight in the AFC, and it feels like that it's tightened up even more potentially. So let's talk at least a little bit about there. Cardinals fans have been talking about the draft all offseason. They've got obviously two first-round picks, which is their own, and the Houston Texans first-round pick. Not quite the same situation as the Bears fans, who have suddenly shifted from nothing but mock drafts, even with their Thursday night game tonight against the Commanders. With Bengals fans, this is something I think it feels like we had this conversation so much during the 2021 season, which was an image of Joe Burrow being tackled, throwing the ball to an open Jamar Chase, or being able to see him take a hit at least, and you'd end up seeing, I think it was the offensive line protecting for him while he would then throw the ball. If the Bengals do end up with a high pick this year, I feel like completely convinced there's going to be fans who will want them to tank for Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, get T. Higgins, have him move to a different team as a free agent, maybe franchise and trade, be able to rebuild. I've gone the opposite end and think that there's enough talent you've seen with this team that you do want to have a number one and a number two wide receiver. Having two number one wide receivers, it can win you a Super Bowl. Cardinals fans, we got to that with Larry Fitzgerald and Anquan Boldin. But I do think that the sustainability in a lot of ways, as we've seen with Joe Burrow, probably would need to look at adjusting and being able to have that strong, solid offensive lineman. That's my take. I could see both ways. What would you say as far as with the Bengals, if we do end up getting to this talk where after Sunday's game, it's draft season through and through?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've been discussing a little bit on Twitter that exact situation. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. being an Ohio State player, Bengals fans are
ready.
For the most part, that crossover is probably 80% of Bengals fans are also Ohio State fans. So you get some lean that way anyway for those Buckeye players. And, you know, everybody likes offense. Everybody likes the flashy. Everybody likes those type of players. A little different situation for me in 2021 when the options were basically Penei Sewell and Jamar Chase. The Bengals at that time didn't have any explosiveness on offense. The receivers were of the slower variety. They needed somebody to stretch the field. They have Jamar Chase now. So even if you say that T. Higgins is gone after the season, whether they sign and trade, whether they just don't re-sign him and let him walk, whatever the case may be, they have the explosive receiver. what they need is a complimentary receiver to go with him. You can get that later on. There's some good in this by all aspects. Obviously, behind Marvin Harrison Jr., there's quite a few good receivers in this draft. I haven't watched a lot of them yet. But there are several really good wide receivers that you can probably get even if in round two. Whereas good offensive linemen are – I don't know how deep this class is. There are a couple of really good options at the top. There's the kid from Penn State whose name I can't pronounce. And then Alt from Notre Dame are obviously the two top
guys. Awo Fashanu, that's the guy that at least who's the – yeah, and that's – There's always these offensive linemen, it feels like, that are coming out. At least it's like, okay, it's Olawo Fashanu and Joe Alt. It's like the easiest right. thing to pronounce and then the least.
Exactly. So this year, if it were me, as it stands right now anyway, I can't speak on what the roster construction will look like by the time the draft comes around. But I would lean more offensive line this year because Jimmy Williams probably not going to be back. He's on his fifth year, and he wasn't happy about the move to right tackle to start with, but he's probably gone. And then when you start to look at what the Bengals have done in the drafts over the past decade, Jonah Williams has been solid anyway for the overall when they got with the 11th pick, but when they picked outside of the first round or outside of the top 10 to 15, even, they have been absolutely awful at it. They've made a mess with second-round picks galore. Some of the first-round tackles they took have not panned out. So they haven't really had a good offensive lineman outside of Jonah Williams that they've drafted since
2011 when they drafted Kevin Zeitler. They've really struggled to draft offensive linemen and develop them.
And if you have to keep going out and signing offensive linemen in free agency, then now you don't have money to spend elsewhere on some of the other positions that you need to address as well.
So I would lean offensive linemen. At least at this point in time.
Yeah, with Cardinals in their spot, with their two picks entering the season, a lot of people have questioned Caleb Williams. And it feels to me like the biggest change that we've seen is that the Cardinals do not seem like they need to have a top quarterback to come in and be able to actually, like, kind of save their franchise. There's always been a lot of questions that people had since he came in, though, about Kyler Murray and his performance. What do you feel like is going to be the case for Arizona as far as the direction to take? Because I look at the team and say that you probably aren't going to be getting a top two pick, it feels like, with how the team has looked. Would you lean toward trying to boost the offense with other playmakers? Or if the Cardinals do lose this game, most people are going to be talking about nothing but Marvin Harrison Jr. themselves, at least for the most part. Do you feel like there's a direction that Arizona should take as they try to rebuild this franchise?
Because as it sits right now, or at least maybe that's just the way people are kind of putting, but I've seen a few mock drafts out there, and it looks like the Chicago Bears are at least a very good chance that they're going to have the first and second pick of the draft. And so I've seen a lot of Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. combo for the Bears, which would be, I guess, an amazing turn of events for them. If you're Arizona, for me, and I don't get to watch a lot of Arizona games, they come on a lot of late games, and for some reason they've decided that the Dallas Cowboys must be on TV every week, so a lot of those West Coast
games. Yeah. So one time we got to be on TV was when we played the Cowboys, and then they actually won. We're like, oh, this is great. People aren't going to underrate the Cardinals for a week.
I mean, if they had a shot at Marvin Harrison Jr., I think that'd be a good position. You mentioned that the Cardinals receivers have performed pretty well this year so far. Michael Wilson has been really a find. I like him a lot. A potentially generational talent. I know that word gets thrown around a ton. But Marvin Harrison Jr. actually could be a generational talent at wide receiver. Can do everything. I don't think that would be a wrong pick. The pass rush class, we're kind of still waiting on to see how it plays out. There are some really good pass rushers that look like they'll be available. You can always use pass rushers. It's one of the more important positions on the team, edge guys.
I don't know what your cornerbacks exactly look like when everybody's healthy.
That is basically one of the players they drafted in the third round. Garrett Williams is coming back. He might be their best cornerback if he comes back healthy. So a lot of Cardinals fans have looked very much at the potential of if they could add a cornerback like Kool-Aid McKinstry, I should say, at least out of Alabama. He's the top corner in the draft, might be a big boost.
Come down to, you know, where the Cardinals wind up picking at. If they can pull off a few wins, if they can play like they did against Dallas and manage to get the pick somewhere in that 8 to 12 range, then they may, that, you know, that might be a good option for them as well. I've seen him going in mocks somewhere from 9, 10, 11, somewhere in that kind of area.
Yeah, it's early at least before the season ends. But let's go and talk about now the last part. Let's get out of here. The score predictions. Right now, as far as the Vegas lines, the Cincinnati Bengals are actually road favorites. Cardinals are home dogs by 3 points. And with the over-under set at about 44.5, it seems like Vegas is predicting almost a 24-21 Bengals victory. The way that these teams have played thus far, it's going to be interesting because I think a lot of Cardinals fans feel there's confidence in the team that they could win this game. But on the other hand, I also could look at this being a tie game in the fourth quarter. Joe Burrow gets the ball back and is able to kind of eke out a last-minute field goal. And I feel like that's what they're looking at. How do you feel like the score would project for this Cardinals-Bengals matchup, and who do you have winning at the end of the day?
I may take the under on that as far as 44 points. That seems like a lot for the way they're going right now anyway. We kind of talked about the Bengals kind of having their back against the wall at this point. The Cardinals are going to be looser, and sometimes that matters. But I think that the Bengals realize that their season is on the line. So I'm going to give them a slight benefit of the doubt. I'll give the Bengals a win. I would guess more like 20-17.
Yeah, I think that sounds good. I at least am going to go with a final score of 23-20. And there's just this kind of gut feeling in me that doesn't want to pick against Arizona in this home game. I feel like I would normally pick them, but this is just one of those cases, like you said, with the backs up against the wall. I do feel like this could be a Lou Anarumo type of special where there is maybe a turnover that gets forced. I could easily see it going very one-sided with Arizona if they're able to get an early turnover or take a lead. I could see that going the other way as well, where it could end up being that I'm totally wrong and ends up like a 30-14 type of Arizona victory. But for now, I kind of am in agreement with you. It just feels like that this Bengals team, and I've also seen Joe Burrow be a little bit more able to move around at practice this week. You know, he's talked about being able to feeling a little bit better. It just feels like it's one of those places where the Cardinals have been so far a competitive team that have come close but haven't been able to truly get it done. I feel like that trend kind of continues this week, but if it does end up flipping, then I think you'll look at maybe one or two Bengals turnovers and the Cardinals would be able to run away with it. I feel like those are the two options. So we'll see if the Bengals are able to win close on Sunday.
I think the way it's going to play, I think it's a close game either way. If the Cardinals can get early enough, then they can lean on that run game. And that's the path to the Cardinals win.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thank you again so much for joining, Vince. If you want to go and plug all the work or other stuff you've done, other podcasts, feel free at this time to just go ahead and get those promos.
Go check out More Bengals Talk. I just started a new podcast on the Around the Block Network. The Pessimist Side of Cincinnati Sports. We'll talk a lot of Bengals, some Cincinnati Reds if you're into baseball. And then we're going to be covering the soccer team at some point and the University of Cincinnati football and upcoming basketball seasons.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. It's got to say a lot of sports over there, plus Ohio State football every year. It's just a crazy time, at least for being an Ohio fan. Thanks again so much for joining, Vance.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, take care. And this has been the Redbird Reboot. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll be back on Saturday at the new Cardinals show. Take care until then. This has been our show, and it's time to log off. All right. The stream's ending. It's just one.